Chapter 46 Human Teachers. Unless there is less teaching, less church making, and better healing, and more of it, our denomination will sink into the slough of past sects in having a religion of the letter without the spirit, of doctrine without demonstration. Mary Baker Eddy, 1907. The persecution of 1907 brought great growth and prosperity to the Christian Science movement, and all publications were eager for news about Mrs. Eddy. When she contributed Youth and Young Manhood, Miscellany, page 272, to the Cosmopolitan, that magazine published a facsimile of the manuscript just as it was received, with the interlineated corrections in Mrs. Eddy's handwriting. For 2 months in advance, the Ladies' Home Journal advertised that they would have an article by Mrs. Eddy in their December issue. A change in the manual in 1907 eliminated primary classes under the Board of Education and stated that normal classes will be held triennially beginning in 1907. The leader chose Judge Hannah to be the teacher of the class, which was to convene December 4th, the first Wednesday in December. Mr. Kimball had been the one normal teacher for the first 4 years of the Board of Education. His understanding of metaphysics was far beyond that of most students at the turn of the century. Mr. Kimball was in New England in the fall, and it is possible that the leader suggested that he might give Judge Hannah some ideas which would be helpful to him in teaching. Mr. Kimball wrote the judge a lengthy letter on November 29th, congratulating him on the fact that he had been selected to teach the 1907 normal class, and then going into detail on points that had been misinterpreted. I do not know that Dr. Baker ever taught anything in the college classes, but by way of general refutation. I know that everything that was supposed to have been taught irregularly was laid at my door before they got through with it. The nearest I ever heard after this fashion was that the doctor, in disposing of error, matter, simply wiped out everything and presented a philosophy which seemed to have annihilation for its ultimate. Mrs. Eddy spoke with me about this propensity, or let me say incompleteness. She said, quote, "I said to Dr. Baker, Jesus said, stretch forth thy hand. But all you have got to say is, you haven't got any hand." End quote. She also spoke of a patient who passed away in Concord and of her inquiry as to the treatment which disposed of the whole matter, or was supposed to, by saying, quote, "There isn't any case," end quote. She denounced that sort of negation and said that the patient got nothing curative. She said to me, quote, "Declare I have a perfect liver, and let the spiritual import of this declaration destroy the false concept about liver," end quote. Later, Mrs. Kimball told Mrs. Eddy that she had explained this to Mr. Webster and that it had healed her of a claim of long continuance. Mrs. Eddy said, quote, "Yes, you may declare I have a perfect liver," or "there is no liver," provided the thought back of these declarations is right, end quote. After talk with her, she expressed her conviction that I was absolutely right in my interpretation of her utterance. Feeling constrained by this conversation and instruction, I went into the class and repeated her exact words, and with much amplification led up to and completed the line of explanation. I have heard of the healing of hundreds of cases through the appreciation of this particular phase of practice. I am under the impression that nearly all the students I taught got a fairly correct appreciation of it, but on the contrary, by the time it got out into the field without the metaphysical analysis and the preliminary explanation, the ones who got it second hand or third or fourth or fifth hand landed on the supposition that Mr. Kimball was teaching that we had spiritual organs. Thousands have, in a similar manner, misconstrued Mrs. Eddy's teaching. Enemies said that my teaching was defective because I spiritualized matter, or the body. Mrs. Eddy told me that she never believed these things about it, because she knew where I stood in the matter. I will say briefly, by way of outline, being is one, and being infinite, it is not composed of duplicates. This one, or infinity, is primarily mind, noumenon, secondarily ideas, phenomena. Hence the statement, there is one mind. That which seems to be the material universe, man and body, is not what it seems to be. Followed to the end, it appears that every normal thing in matter is a lie about a spiritual fact or idea, and the spiritual thing is all right. As Mrs. Eddy also said, quote, perfect in God, end quote. Now, what is the remedy? Is it annihilation or transformation? If there were no opposite affirmation to the concept, quote, my liver is imperfect, end quote, then the ultimate would be a belief of disaster instead of transformation. What is the opposite affirmation? It is something like this. Body is spiritual. It consists of spiritual ideas. Every idea is perfect, the idea of which liver is a false concept, is perfect, in good, or finally getting down to an immediate offset, quote, I have a perfect liver in God, end quote. Mrs. Eddy used to have an equivalent in Science and Health like this, quote, realize the presence of health and the harmonious action of organs, end quote, etc. I do not know that I quote this correctly. There was a good deal more in this letter, which was undoubtedly very helpful to Mr. Hanna. At the completion of the class, he wrote to Mrs. Eddy, December 14, 1907. Beloved teacher, the class in the Board of Education closed last Wednesday. Including Miss Eaton and Miss Campbell, there were 32 in the class. I think the class was a good one in its makeup. I hope it will prove to have been well selected. It was as well instructed as I knew how to have it, and I hope for right results. I made the examination as thorough as I could, and I think all are fairly entitled to the certificates. These I shall have prepared very soon. The class, with the exception of Mrs. Eaton and Campbell, was selected from primary students of the board. It seemed to us this was in fair and logical order, under the amended bylaw. It no doubt disappointed many, but many would have been disappointed under any circumstances. I am grateful for the opportunity to have conducted the class. I learned much and was greatly helped. I enclose a copy of the names, etc. We unite in deepest love to you. Sincerely, your student, Septimus J. Hanna. Judge Hanna may not have been the most gifted teacher, nor the most outstanding metaphysician. But he did have one thing that put him beyond almost all others in the field. Mind had revealed to him in 1898 the identity of the discoverer and founder as the second coming of the Christ, a revelation which never left him. Only part of the editorial he had written on that subject at the time was published, and he wrote of this in his reminiscences in later years. Although the last letter from Mrs. Eddy indicated permission to proceed with the publication of the entire article, I concluded it best to publish only that of Mr. Spring, and the more general part of what I said of the prophecy of Isaiah, deferring the other until a future time, and make it a separate article. After this, events in connection with the work and the Woodbury suit came so thick and fast that there seemed no opportune time to again bring the matter to Mrs. Eddy's attention, which I felt I must do before publishing it. And there it rested. My own conception of the whole matter, however, has not changed, and I see it today just as I saw it then. Perhaps this normal class was the, quote, future time, end quote, for the dissemination of Judge Hanna's revelation to 32 selected students, rather than to the field at large. At least one of those students, and perhaps more, received the revelation as if it was his own, and it never left him. That one was Bliss Knapp. Before the close of the normal class, the director sent a sad note to the leader, which began, quote, "It is with deep regret that we notify you of the passing on of our beloved friend and associate, Joseph Armstrong, CSD," end quote. Mrs. Eddy's immediate response, Miscellany, page 296, was published in the Sentinel of December 14th, quote, "Hear, O Israel," end quote. The late lamented Christian Science brother and the publisher of my books, Joseph Armstrong, CSD, is not dead. Neither does he sleep nor rest from his labors in divine science. And his works do follow him. Evil has no power to harm, to hinder, or to destroy the real spiritual man. He is wiser today, healthier and happier than yesterday. The mortal dream of life, substance or mind and matter has been lessened, and the reward of good and punishment of evil and the working out of this Adam dream of evil will end in harmony. Evil powerless, and God good, omnipotent, and infinite. Mary Baker Eddy. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire, December 10th, 1907. The next day, December 11th, Calvin Fry wrote to the trustees of the Publishing Society. "In reply to your letter of yesterday, received by our beloved leader, I am requested to say she does not recommend that the publishing house be closed at the hour of the funeral services tomorrow. She does not approve of recognizing these claims of mortal mind. By acknowledging the reality of sin, disease, and death to any unnecessary extent. She was deeply grieved at the announcement of the decease of our dear brother Armstrong, as all were at Pleasant View. Mrs. Eddy's message to the world in the December Ladies' Home Journal is destined to elevate all Christendom, and it comforted the mourners at that time. What Christmas means to me. Miscellany, page 261. To me, Christmas involves an open secret, understood by few or by none. God creates man perfect and eternal in his own image. Hence, man is the image, idea, or likeness of perfection, an ideal which cannot fall from its inherent unity with divine love, from its spotless purity and original perfection. Christmas to me is the reminder of God's great gift, his spiritual idea, man and the universe, a gift which so transcends mortal, material, sensual giving that the merriment, mad ambition, rivalry, and ritual of our common Christmas seem a human mockery in mimicry of the real worship in commemoration of Christ's coming. The splendor of this nativity of Christ reveals infinite meanings and gives manifold blessings. Material gifts and pastimes tend to obliterate the spiritual idea in consciousness, leaving one alone and without his glory. On December 20th, Dr. Hamilton wrote to Mrs. Eddy again, "My dear Mrs. Eddy, I send you a little Christmas remembrance and hope you will enjoy the book that I send with my best wishes. The past year has been full of annoyance for you from the Nexters and other designing people. But I am sure you have already cast aside your annoyances. It is the lot of everyone who is in earnest in this life to have rivals and sometimes calumniators, and you have certainly had your share. May 1908 be full of peace for you. Very sincerely, your friend, Alan McLean Hamilton." The Nexters and other designing people had not ceased annoying the leader. McClellan wrote Mrs. Eddy on December 19th regarding the action begun on October 25th, that the trustees had agreed upon a settlement of $140,000 with the Nexters, including Foster Eddy. The necessary papers were drawn up by Streeter and Chandler and were to be signed by all parties on December 23rd. But for reasons known only to himself, Chandler did not have George Glover and Foster Eddy in Concord to sign the papers on the date set. And because they had not been completed in the specified time, Mrs. Eddy declined to consummate the agreement, writing her counsel that she refused to change the conditions relative to her heirs. Chandler referred more than once to the fact that they had uncovered Mrs. Eddy's $1 million, and he never ceased urging his clients, Glover and Foster Eddy, to get as much of it as they could. But Mrs. Eddy counteracted this acquisitiveness in an interesting way. On December 14th, she wrote to one of the trustees of her personal property, Archibald McClellan, and her letter was published in the next issue of the Sentinel on December 21st. "My dear trustee, I desire to commence immediately to found a Christian Science institution for the special benefit of the poor and the general good of all mankind. The founding and endowment of this institution will cost at least $1 million. Please come to me at your earliest opportunity, and I will give you further details. Most truly yours, Mary Baker Eddy. Both Pleasant View and the publishing house were inundated with joyful response, as well as contributions, causing the announcement that this was Mary Baker Eddy's charity and contributions were not requested. Further letters requested the privilege of participating. Whether Mrs. Eddy's intention at the end of 1907 was to pursue this project is a question, for the organizational part was never set up. But the announcement made on December 21st was widely copied by the daily press, and as 1907 was turning to 1908, there was a great deal of favorable editorial comment regarding Mrs. Eddy's proposed project. To the sincere student who will go back and reread Mrs. Eddy's letter of December 14th with thoughtful consideration, it is easy to see that it is the story of her life. She is describing her every thought and action for the past 41 years. End quote. To found a Christian Science institution for the special benefit of the poor and the general good of all mankind. The founding and endowment of this institution will cost at least $1 million. End quote. It had cost the discoverer, founder, and leader a great deal more than, quote, $1 million, end quote.